And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every single episode out there in the galaxy of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, after a rebel attempt to rescue Onderon's true king, Ramses Dindup, an unexpected ally steps forward to halt Dindup's execution and aid the rebel cause. There will be turncoats everywhere! Saw runs off on his own, but it actually works out for him? And Ahsoka finally gets to do stuff. We're talking about Soft War this week. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing good.
Like I haven't talked to you in forever, a whole 5 minutes.
Yeah.
All 5 minutes of it. What'd you do in your 5 minutes?
I went pee-pee.
Me too. And then I played with my cat and looked at her and petted her. And now she's sitting in the moonlight. I stopped her from eating an earbud.
I'm going to finish off the last quarter of my Mountain Dew energizing orange citrus kickstart, and I'll be up all night.
I'm officially out of coffee and I've moved on to water, so yay.
I've got my water waiting right behind this.
Well, water are we waiting for?
Oh, ho, 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 ho.
I don't know.
Wow, yeah. That was terrible and wonderful at the same time.
You're very welcome. I'm here all week. I try. That's all I got.
Guess what I'm drinking, Hope?
Mountain Dew.
Banana citrus Mountain Dew. Guess what I'm drinking, Hope?
Banana citrus Mountain Dew.
Guess what I'm drinking, Hope?
Aren't you glad I didn't say banana citrus Mountain Dew?
Orange citrus Mountain Dew. Aren't you glad I didn't say banana? Yeah, you know jokes.
I got the jokes. Clone Wars.
Clone Wars. Hey,
yay!
How about that?
We're here all week, guys. We're here all week. All right. The Soft War. The Soft War is the 92nd episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars.
Yoda has fought the Soft War many times. Yoda hasn't always won, to be honest.
Do you want to be a tampon, Yoda?
Mm-hmm. Think about that.
Now I got a song idea in my head called I Want to Be a Tampon.
I want to be a tampon. Gonna help this girl then be surrounded by pussy. The tampons. Gonna get up and there's gonna be great until it's not. Something like that, right? Anyway, The Soft War is the 92nd episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars and aired on October 20th, 2012. Thanks for staying with us for over 100 episodes, you guys. We appreciate you.
Yes, you patient.
It was
people.
Written by Chris Collins and directed by Kyle Dunleavy. Ooh, some extra information for you. Kalani is voiced by Greg Berger. And remember, I was saying last week that Kalani made it all the way to Rebels. Greg Berger actually came back and reprised that role in Rebels. So I thought that was cool. His other works includes G.I. Joe, Transformers, Sesame Street, Real Monsters, and he was the voice of Odie for the Garfield show. General Tandon is voiced by David Kane. Why did my thing just move by itself? His other works includes Gundam Wings, X-Men Evolution, Battlestar Galactica, and more Transformers series than you can count, voicing both Megatron and Optimus Prime. And he was also does various voiceovers for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. And General Kalani is the first super tactical droid that we've seen in the series, a more robust version of the spindly tactical droids introduced in Season 1. Several tactical droids designs will appear throughout Season 5.
Yay!
So Yoda, you want to be a tampon?
Out of sight.
I don't... like a frog crawling up in there.
Once a month, Yoda crawls up out of the swamp to do his job.
Turns into a little tadpole and just wiggles on it.
No!
I'm thrusting myself out!
That no. is why you fail!
This is a weird episode, guys. I'm sorry. I can't wait to see our comment section for this episode.
Oh, Jesus. Alright.
Struggles often begin and end with the truth. In bed!
That's true.
That is true, yes. No, we're two for two on the last two.
Yeah, I think this works so much better. I really like that one, because... Yeah.
I don't know if it...
Doesn't
necessarily is that keyed into the episode so much. I guess it could be. I mean,
I guess when it comes to the truth of like when Saw found out why the king stepped down.
Yeah.
And then he told Tandon, and then Tandon was like, "Oh, that's the real story," and then everything. It works much better in bed.
Yes. Yes.
Which isn't
often
always
the
true.
Case.
Well, not always. I mean, if you have, like, Jell-O, that does not always work well in bed. It just makes a mess.
I'll take your word for it.
And you know, fingernail clippers. That was the first thing I saw on my desk. What else is on my desk that I could throw in bed? Post-it notes. Those probably don't work well in bed either. Unless you have, like, a sexy office fantasy and you need just, like, stand-in pasties, so just grab those post-it notes.
You know, I mean, if you got two, like, say, like, people who are, like, not too empathetic, you know, maybe they might want to put a post-it note on certain erogenous zones to just as a marker for the other person. they'd look like a performance of Moomin Shants, but...
Maybe they're just like, oh, I have a secret office fantasy. Post-it notes.
No, they just put a number on them, and they're just like, you want to move from number one to number two to number three to number four.
Oh, there's an entire Friends episode about that.
Oh, really? Well, I never saw that because I don't watch that show.
Because Chandler goes to the girls, and he's just like, you know, I want to get better at this. And they're like, there are seven zones. And he's like, seven, and they're just like, yeah, you start with a little one, and then a 1-2, a 1-2-3, a 4-3, a 2-3-7, 4-5-7, 6-7, 7-7-7, and he's just like, oh my god. So yes, that has been covered in Friends. Act one. Okay, this has been a weird
opening.
Let's get
as far away from Friends as possible.
I love Friends. I watch it all the time. If it's on, I watch it.
You're still okay.
This has been a rough night of
recording. I have some other close friends who watch Friends too, so...
Last week you called me racist, and now you're getting on to me for watching Friends.
Now I'm putting you in the Friends zone. Not the friend zone. The Friends zone.
Actually, that term was coined in Friends.
Oh, Jesus.
It was Joey first coined the term friend zone, and then it became a thing.
Well, that's another strike against him. Act one,
let's move on. Okay, oh, I forgot I did this a little bit differently. Once upon a time, there was a... There was a planet called Onderon, not to be confused with Alderaan. In the time of the Clone Wars, Onderon came under Separatist rule. It was a trying time for the people, as a droid occupation swept the capital city of Isis, led by a puppet king, Sanjay Rash. He's not really a puppet. That would be creepy. The rightful current king, Ramses Dinup, is imprisoned during the takeover. a group of rebel freedom fighters were determined to stand up to this tyranny. Stila is their sharpshooting nominated leader. Saw Guerrera is her older brother, who doesn't like to give up power, since he proclaimed himself leader first. That's okay. He gets to lead in Rebels in Rogue One. They are joined by diplomat-turned-soldier Lux Bonteri. Under the watchful gaze of Jedi Padawan Ahsoka Tano, for who plot reasons isn't allowed to fight with them, they must rise up and rally the people for Onderon, one rebel attack at a time. This is the story of terribly written love triangles wrapped up into cool battles. On to this week! The Separatists would send in reinforcements to wander around the city. The rebels have upped their attacks using actual bombs and not just EMPs to take out the droids. After taking out a tank in the droid regiment, the people, understandably, look a bit scared. Stila, with the help of Lux and Ahsoka, puts up a little holo device all over the city and sends out a holoscape message to the people of Onderon. She states that they need the people's help to reclaim their planet from the Separatists. King Rash is a traitor, and they need their rightful King Denna back on the throne. Well, Rash isn't too happy about that. He has called in droid General Kalani and human General Tandon to discuss what to do. Tandon wants to use the royal militia to discuss terms with the terrorists throughout rebels. Kalani sees a flaw in this plan, stating men in Tandon's own ranks might sympathize with the rebels. Rash doesn't want any diplomacy with the rebels. Tandon informs them about who's in charge, being Stila, Saw, and the late Separatist Mina Bonteri's son, Lux.
If robots had feelings.
Well, the robot does not have feelings. So Kalani would be upset if... because the robot doesn't have feelings, Kalani would normally be upset that he didn't have this information. Tandon's like, well, I just told you, bitch, pay attention. And Rash is like his namesake and automatically assumes that his predecessor, King Denup, is behind all of this. They bring in King Denup, who is like, what is it now? And Rash is all like, I know you're behind this, I'm insecure. And Denup is like, I told you the last episode. I'm imprisoned. I'm alone. I'm in a jail cell with no visitors. Hey, you, Mr. Guard. Hey, guard, have I had any visitors? And the guard is like, nope, no one's come to see him. See? Denup says, this is all on you, bro. It's the will of the people, not me. And Rash is like, whatever, I'm the king and I'm insecure in my power. Let's hurry up into Act 2. What'd you guys think of Act 1?
Why did they... This is another, and now it's come up twice with the old king where they pull him out and they're like, you're doing all this. And he's just like, hey, man, I'm in the jail cell. You know that. That doesn't go anywhere. It's just this weird. I mean, how dumb. I mean, if it was a ruse that they were playing through, they wouldn't have to do it with the king. They could just do it to the people and say, we know your king is behind this. We're
pissed out. It kind of falls your note of what you were saying last week, like when they took off the power grid. They could have been like, look at what your old king has done. He's taken away your power.
Yeah, and they're setting up a thing with the old king where it's like, oh, okay, you know, you're doing... And the king knows, the old king knows he's not doing it, and the new king should know he's not doing it because he's the one who locked the old king up. So
I think Ramses is a bit of a tool, though.
He's just dumb because if it was a game he was playing with the old king just to give him an excuse to demonize him, that's one thing. But you wouldn't have to play that game with the king, you know, because they both know. So why go through the whole sham of being like, I know you're behind this. It's just a weird little thing that goes nowhere, and it's gone nowhere twice. It's almost been the same scene.
Yeah,
you know, twice in a row.
I think I could also see a little bit of the line of what Kalani said at Tandem, that, like, you know, your men could be, if they would have brought that up, like, Kalani had, like, did your men talk to the old king, and Tandem's like, no, they didn't, then that would make more sense, because probably the only people who have seen the old king are the guards,
right?
But it doesn't get brought up.
So I'm not going to call Kalani. I'm calling him Mr. Fancy Robot.
With his gold
He's all gilded and fancy. Yep.
You're going to have to call him that until Rebels. I hope you remember that.
Yeah, that's fine.
We'll call him Gilded 3000.
He's Mr. Fancy Pants. And I have more notes, but I think that I got my notes wrong, and they're in the next part of the story.
Okay.
So I'll wait till next time. Well, no. Yeah, no. Yeah.
Until next week.
We didn't have the scene with Stila and...
No, there was a screen wipe after that, and I was really debating where actually to cut it, because part of the rebel thing could have been in Act 1, too, but I wasn't quite sure. I mean, a lot of Act 1 was them actually fighting droids for, like, 3 minutes.
Yeah, so I'm going to move those two. I have two notes on that, but they're not till the next part. So that's all I got for this first part.
I only have three notes for this part, too. I know there's, like, the whole, like, Roman Empire Mediterranean thing going on in the capital city of Isis. I like that when they brought in the replacement separatist tanks, if you look at them from behind, they actually look like Trojan horses.
Yeah, they kind of do.
Yeah, and that's a really cool kind of, like, nod. I don't think they did it on purpose, but it definitely works in this place. And I think I mentioned it in the first episode that the tanks look like horses. They're Trojan horses, full of droids. Okay, so something I thought that was interesting in this opening thing is in the first and second episode, Anakin and Obi-Wan were very clear for the rebels to use, like, EMP-like weapons so civilians don't get hurt. They throw a fucking bomb.
Anakin and Obi-Wan ain't around anymore.
Yeah, they throw a freaking bomb into a tank and it crashes into a building. And I find that, like, so interesting because they went from these safe attacks to, like, more brutal attacks. And not only is it kind of moving into that, like, Saw Gerrera territory where he is in Rogue One and Rebels, I just like seeing that deterioration of, like, okay, we've been doing EMPs for safe attacks, now we're going into more radical attacks.
You're going into the more, instead of, you know, there's the, like, okay, theoretically this is how you should be fighting these guys, but then there's the practical, if you want to win, you might have to blow something up, so... I think Ahsoka probably if Obi-Wan and Anakin were there and Rex, more so Rex and Anakin would be like, yeah, I understand them
And Obi-Wan would be like, I have wet blankets.
Yeah,
for
it's not a real, like, it might be questionable to do, but it's not, it ended up well and it didn't seem very questionable. That's what I like about this. They're just... If they were ramping it up real fast, they would have had, like, somebody get get killed in this episode, you know? But they're...
Yeah, it would have been different, like, if a citizen, like, if the tank, like, instead of running into a building, like, ran into a house and, like, people came running out, like, our house!
Right, yeah, they blew up a nursery and killed a bunch of babies like Will Wheaton.
Oh, if you missed the Will Wheaton's
a baby killer.
See last week's episode for how Will Wheaton killed a baby. Not for real, by the way, guys. Don't go sending him this. I short version, I read the story of Lana in from a certain point of view. And the dad
sent... Baby killer.
His dad sent... The dad in the story sent, like, a 2-year-old baby to Alderaan. And I tweeted Will Wheaton, like, that baby better not be dead, Will Wheaton.
Good work, the baby Leslie.
The baby got sent to Alderaan, and I was sad, and I was free. I was panicking for this child, this fake child in a Star Wars book. I was panicking. Okay, so when I wrote this note, before I saw the end of the episode, so I didn't remember the end of the episode. So, bless you.
Thank you.
So just let me, as I read this note, just know I hadn't seen the end of the episode yet. I don't remember a lot of details of this episode. So I like that Tanda and Kalani are not getting along in this opening act, because it sort of sets up an opening if Tanda does switch sides, which she ends up doing, especially since they gave us that one shot of Tanda's face when they bring in King Denup, because, you know, Tanda's been mostly poker face for the majority of the episode in this opening act, but when they bring in the king, there's definitely a kind of emotion there that he emits.
Well, I like Tanda because Tanda is the experienced warrior who's not just an experience, he doesn't just know war, he knows the people of the planet. So he's the smartest guy in the room. I also like that when he and the robot, when Mr. Fancy Pants and him disagree, they square off like they're going to fist fight. Even the robot's like, come on, man. he's heading at him with his, like, dukes up. And it's just funny seeing a robot that's, like, got a little testosterone problem, you know?
So K2SO?
Yeah, it's like that. It's like he's got they got to turn down his testosterone algorithm.
But yeah, I definitely like that scene, especially because like you said, that he is the experienced one on Alderaan, and this robot just kind of shows up and he's just like, "I'm here to take over things." Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm a robot.
Yeah. Well, that's all I have for Act One. Did you have anything else?
Nope, I guess all my notes are in Act Two.
All right, well, I'm going to let this cat out. You want to go out?
You know she wants to go out.
Yeah, you want to go out?
You know what the answer to that is.
Are you going to come back 5 minutes later screaming out?
You know what the answer to that is, too.
Oh, no. All right.
She heard me talking about killing babies, and she's like, oh, that's right, I got to go out and slaughter some mice before it gets too dark.
It's too dark. She's not allowed back outside after dark.
Ah.
Yeah, it's already past that, so she'll probably just lick my hand and try to eat my mouse as I work later.
Excellent.
All right, Act Two. Donald runs up to the puberty clubhouse and tells Stila that King Dinup will be executed tomorrow in the square. Stila realizes that they want to make an example of him. Ahsoka points out that an execution could make the king a martyr. Well, Saul wants to just bust out the king right now in the rock and roll way. Stila says they should do it in public at the execution. They should rescue the king in public at the execution. Saul points out that the king will be expecting that, being King Ramses, King Rash, not King Dinup, will be expecting that. Stila says that it's a moment for all of Alderaan if they can save King Dinup in public. I should have designated these kings better. There's two.
I
want to
call him King Denim. King Denim and King Rash. You got a rash from your denim jeans. That's how I'm going to remember it.
That actually kind of works, because Rash is kind of a jerk. Saul starts to leave, and Stila commands him to stop, knowing he's going to try and break up the king. She said that this isn't about Saul, and he needs to weigh the risks. Saul's like, that's why I'm being Cool Beans Cat Guy, and I'm going to do this like Han. Solo! And he leaves. I like my jokes, so. Stila sends
more
Donald
puns,
Paul.
How about that? What a coincidence.
Who would have ever thought in Jackass and Jedi? Stila sends Dono to follow him. Lux tries to comfort Stila over Saul leaving. She says her brother has always been brash and doesn't think things through. Saul is hurting everyone right now, but Stila needs to form a plan. Lux stares at her with his puberty eyes, and she's like, can you leave me alone? I can't think with all your hormones crashing into my face. Outside, Ahsoka Skypes her two dads to fill them in on what's up. Ahsoka is struggling with the idea that the rebels are risking their lives just to save one king guy and not save all the people. Obi-Wan points out that King Dinup represents hopes for the people. She admits that she feels responsible for the rebels' success and failure. Obi-Wan says that she can step in if she has to. But if training rebels against the Separatists is to be as successful as a war tactic, the rebels need to learn how to survive on their own. Meanwhile, Saul is making up his own spy music as he sneaks into the prison. He gets into a super nice prison courtyard to find King Dinup. Saul wants to bust him out of this place, and Dinup asks if he's one of the meddlers interfering with the king's rule. Dinup explains that he had a difficult choice to make. Either join the Republic or join the Confederacy. Both are corrupt. He didn't want someone to make the choice for him. Instead, he chose the wrong thing by not choosing any side at all, leaving the door open for the Separatists to invade. Saul shouts, I'm not listening at all because we have a Jedi. Oh, cool, Dinup gives a thumbs up. Why didn't you say so? Jedi, let's get out of here. Saul shoots his grappling hook towards the top of the wall and it hits a shield, setting off the alarm. It's a one-way shield that lets him get in, but not out. And now Saul is caught. Dinup sees this and heads back to the base. Stila finishes going over the plan. Lux asks Ahsoka if she will help them. Ahsoka says that she must sit it out since she's gotten too much involved already. Dono kicks in the door, announcing Saw's been captured. Lux, of all people, makes the rally cry to save Saul. But it's Steela who makes the difficult choice to stand down this time. They must save the king over her own brother. They can't do both. Ahsoka agrees, and they can't save Saul tonight. What'd you think of Act 2? Boop.
Well, we had the please don't look at me like that line, which is right out of Empire Strikes Back.
Yep.
And, lots of feeling squashing going on in this part.
How do you mean?
Well, she's got to squash her feelings for her brother is the most,
Oh, Steela. I thought you were talking about, because we've talked about, like,
Steela's squashing feelings for her brother, and Steela's doing sort of the same thing that Ahsoka's got to do, is she has to squash feelings for her brother and for Lux in this one. Because she's got feelings for Lux, but she knows, you know, now is not the time or place, that's why. So we're continuing on the theme from the last one of squashed feelings, only this time it's Steela and not Ahsoka. And I like that Mr. Fancy Robot's sort of getting taught a lesson. And this, there's a sort of good cop, bad robot scene with I can't remember the name of, the new character, he's sort of the good cop, and the robot's sort of like the bad cop with the king almost. It's weird. The robot, you know, when they confront the old king, you know, you've got the robot who's just like, you know, no mercy, and then the other guy going, look, I know, hey, you know, that robot's a dick, you know.
So, yeah.
So work something out here. So that's kind of cool.
That was in the last act. You could have said that.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, well. That was in the show anyway, so it still counts. But that's about all I got for this part, and apparently the last part, too.
All right. I mentioned last week how I kind of wish we got to see the conversation between Steela and Saw after Steela became the leader. Especially because of this opening scene where Steela and Saul are butting heads about this plan, which is why I kind of really wish we got to see Saul officially giving her the power and Steela being okay with it. Because, I mean, Saul clearly thinks that he knows what's best, but Steela is looking at the big picture, and she had to say something last week to get him temporarily on board with this, that he's now fighting back against his own sister on these plans.
And she's also thinking differently now, because now she's the leader. So she's got to think on a different tier than she did before.
Though I do have to give this to Saul. Trying to save the king during the execution is a way more risky plan than trying to get him out of jail.
That's true.
But of course, also, they didn't know
that also was... PR-wise, saving him in front of all the people is also quite a bit. If they pull it off, it's quite a bit more public relations victory.
Yeah, I mean, they both definitely had good points to that, because Saw was like, well, this one's safer, and Steela's like, this one might be better for us in the long run. Mm-hmm. So they both have really good points, and so I enjoyed watching them butting heads.
It was also one of those things where once Saw went off and did it, you know, you sort of figure, well, why not do both, you know?
Yeah.
If Saul's successful, then hey, you know, you save... The basic thing is you want to save the king's life, so if he saves the king's life that way... You know, you can't fault him for not doing, you know, doing it in front of the whole populace, which has way worse odds of getting away with. But, yeah, so I think she was like, well, I can't stop him from going, and if he succeeds, it helps us, but, you know, if we all go with him, that's going to mess things up. It was even, I think, a little risky to send somebody to tail him, but ultimately a good idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, last week we were talking about how we have been enjoying watching the slow burn kind of presentation of Saul Guerrero, that he's not, like, completely radical and stuff like that. But I like now in this episode, they're showing how reckless and, like, forward-thinking that Saul can be, which actually lines up a lot with how he is in Rogue One and Rebels.
Yeah, but he's not really that much more... like reckless than anybody else who would be than any other character that we've met. He's less reckless than, say, Anakin was. So you know, most of his recklessness can be written off as he's untested, you know, he's not experienced, but as opposed to thinking it might be like his through running character trait, even though we know it is.
Yeah, sorry, I had to let the cat back in because 5 minutes later she wanted back in.
Really?
Yeah, how not surprised am I? But, like, a lot of it is just, like, I like how they're presenting it, because I feel like Saul is not one for, like, long-form plans. He'd much rather have, like, instant gratification plans.
Yes.
So it's nice, because, like, now we're starting to see a little bit of, like, how Saul was in Rogue One and Rebels, which is lining up quite nicely with their overall plans for the character.
I'm glad you agree. Slow and steady. I like it.
I also, you know, as much as I don't like the idea of the love triangle, I do like the idea of Steela and Lux being a couple. I think they balance each other very well. He is kind of like the diplomat becoming a soldier. She's a soldier becoming a leader. So they have those two sides of each other that really balance out well. And I think it's really nice how they're being presented together. I think they're a good idea for a couple.
And he's not friends with her brother. Which is also important for sisters. They don't want to be hanging out with their brother's friends.
Yeah, and I just, you know, oh, cat. Ow! Kitty, why? Why? Why?
The only thing that would make Lux more attractive to her is if her dad hated him, too.
Yeah. Where are their parents? They're probably dead. Get off my desk! Stop it! Cat!
She won't stop it. I can tell you that right now.
Oh, anyway. Sorry, everybody. I've had 2 weeks for you guys, an hour and a half for me dealing with the cat. I'm really glad that Anakin and Obi-Wan do end up leaving Ahsoka behind on her own, though. As much as I was talking last week about how I wish Rex was there, too, I like that Ahsoka's also on her own. Because she's pretty much getting a crash course on how to teach people how to teach people and lead people. And this is something that, like, both of the other Jedi already know, because they were both teachers to each other, and they're currently the teachers to Ahsoka. And this is a good way for her to learn, too. Well, and it's kind of different because, like, Ahsoka is, you know, when Ahsoka was like, I feel responsible for them, I could just see the two dads, like, I kind of wish Obi-Wan looked at Anakin and was just like, yeah, I know.
I think story-wise... Ahsoka is only there right now, outside of, like, story-wise and writer-wise, to have one through character. Like, there is no reason with what they're trying to tell with this story why you would need Obi-Wan and Anakin and Rex there also in the story. It would make it, you know, they could add things to it, but that would add unnecessary complications to it.
They could really get away
with not even having Ahsoka there.
Yeah,
we could just be watching these guys, you know, Saw Gerrera's band and Steela's band, you know, evolving in their storyline, and you could make a few adjustments for when, you know, Ahsoka jumped in at certain points. But I think she's really there right now in the story to have just one main character as a through. Because Rebels has always had, like, somebody, even if it's one of the droids, there's somebody from the main cast of characters in every episode. So, you know, that just to have Ahsoka there allows him a lot more space to tell the story of the main story that we're focusing on.
Yeah. That's a really nice prison they stuck King Denim in.
Yeah, nice little gilded cage. But I guess that's sort of, you know,
I mean, it has a courtyard and water fountains. Like, yeah. That's like the Ritz of the prisons.
That's sort of how it works out, I guess, when you're king. Instead of throwing him in the dungeon.
Mel Brooks comes out. It's good to be the king.
Yeah.
You know what? Speaking of Mel Brooks, you know what I was thinking of the other day? Because we know we want to do one commentary about... the Clone Wars one, but I really want to do Spaceballs.
I have to do some little internet research and see how Spaceballs 2 is coming along.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. I have something in my eyeball.
I mean, Mel Brooks is literally 184 years old, so I don't know how much energy he's got for Spaceballs 2, but Spaceballs 2 could be really good.
What if it's just like nothing but commentary on like the new franchises?
Well, that's why. Yeah, it would have to be a parody of reboots they'll be able to pick on everything in the world in it, you know. But I would imagine that they would be able to pick on the new movies and the prequels too, because the prequels have been in between, you know. So you might as well have some prequel humor in there too. I mean, it has to have a Jar Jar character, right?
Oh my God, yes.
You know, I mean, it's got to have a comment on Jar Jar, and it's got to have some CGI jokes, and it's got to have some lens flare jokes.
Do you remember, like, in the first movie when they were like, when they accidentally captured their stunt doubles?
Yes. Yeah. Oh,
what if
yeah.
they accidentally capture a person like a motion captured suit?
I mean, they have to bring back some of the characters as old people. A lot of them are dead. Joan Rivers is dead. John Candy's dead. I don't know if... I think Rick Moranis is still alive.
I think he is, too.
And I think the guy who played the Han Solo character is still alive, too. So they could have him and the Druish princess in it as older characters and do some old age jokes. And, I mean, Mel Brooks could also... They just don't have to put as much age makeup on him to have. I can't remember what the Yoda character was called in it, but he could still do that. But yeah, there's more than enough jokes for Spaceballs 2. Spaceballs the sequel, or something like that. It's got to be something like that, or the Spaceballs the. The Schwartz Awakens.
The Schwartz Awakens. I like it. Alright, anyway, back to Clone Wars. So, in the conversation between Denim and Saul, I really like that Denim flat out calls Saul one of the meddlers, showing that the king isn't totally on board with the whole rebel insurgents thing too.
It's funny because he's seems on board with it when he's with the puppet king and talking to him, but yeah, when he finally gets to face this guy, he's like, "Hey, look!" But it was that sort of weakness that got him there in the first place too. So I don't feel too bad for the old king, you know. And he is kind of weak because as soon as he hears Jedi, he's like, "What? Okay, never mind," you know. All the ethical problems he has just go out the door because they're all, you know, all his problem is if there's, it seems like if there's some chance that they're going to lose, he just doesn't want to do anything. And so having a Jedi all of a sudden gives him the courage to be like, oh, okay, we can act now, you know, because we'll probably win.
I really like that about the character of Denim, though, because...
Well, it's more realistic.
And that's what I like about it. Like, the fact that he has that flaw. He's a very flawed character.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's very realistic.
He's not
like,
the noble, deposed, you know, king that's leader.
He's not like, say, like, Duchess Satine. Duchess Satine is very firm. Like, she's like, we are pacifists, we're staying out of this war. that's essentially what this guy did too, but it was a much more weak-willed thing of like, where Satine was just like, we are pacifists, we're staying out of the war.
Right.
He was just like, I'm just not going to choose, and I think that's best for my people, and then it failed him.
Well, I like that he's complex enough that he understood that it fit, that he understands his weaknesses, he understands that he's flawed and even questions whether he should be, you know, he should be put back as king, you know?
Yeah.
There was a good line in the last Star Trek with a leader who wasn't deposed yet, but she had just staved off, like, basically almost got deposed and was close to getting deposed and still won. And she was like, I can't be, you know, she was going for an end run, and a character was like, you don't have to die. And she's like, look, I'm the leader, and now everybody's seen my neck, and there's nobody will ever take me, you know, once they've seen my neck and seen that I have weaknesses, I'm done from now on. I will be hounded. This was a more ruthless world than what we have here, but it's the same general sort of thing. Is he's like, you know, I sort of blew it as king. If you put me back as king, am I really going to be an inspiration to the people, you know?
Yeah.
Which is a strength, but it's a strength of recognizing his weaknesses. And it's also the weakness of he recognizes it, but it doesn't seem like he's really willing to, like, be like, okay, I have to buckle up and be stronger. He's just sort of like, yeah, I'm the wussy king.
Yeah,
and I'm but gonna, he's still and you can put me up there, and I'm gonna wussy out again. That's what I do.
He's still not as bad as Rash, though. Rash is just awful.
Rash is just a figurehead,
and he's kind of like a baby too. He's just because he's putting blame on everything but himself.
He's easily manipulatable. He's a figurehead that they can manipulate and dispose of if they have to, because he's really useless anyway. So
yeah,
they can override him or whatever. He's just. But, you know, he looks kingly in his outfit, so when you put him out in front of the people, he's got his space fig in his hand, he looks like Nero, you know, or whatever.
His space figs.
He loves those space figs, man. They keep him regular. He does. He might not be too bright, and he might be a puppet, but he's regular as hell.
He has good poops.
Yep, they're good, strong poops, and he's got a clean bill of health from his space doctor.
I just imagine him, like, dragging in Kalani and just being like, look at it! That means I'm a good king!
It's gorgeous.
And Kalani's just like, Kalani's just like, that's a piece of shit, sir. And he's like, I know!
I know, it's 5 foot long. Are you kidding me?
That's like, I ate to be the tapeworm, and it came right out. Oh, my last note.
Wow.
Rest in peace, Tippy. We miss you.
You were classy, Tippy.
You were. My only other note is I really like Stila's moment at the end of the act where she has to choose saving the king over her own brother. Like, that was her, like, come-to-leader moment.
Yes.
So, instead of a come-to-Jesus moment, it's
and
a come
she does the right
moment.
Thing. That's what I'm noticing. That's why I like the slow burn of this. So, you know, a lot of this could have been them screwing up a lot more, but they're not following that. It's good. I like it.
Me too. But that's all I had for Act 2. It was Act 3.
Act 3.
Wrap this puppy up.
Yes.
So,
better leave some breathing holes, though, because puppies need air.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Save the puppies, guys. In the arms of an angel.
Don't give any puppies to Will Wheaton. He'll probably kill it just like he does babies.
That's going to be an ongoing joke that Will Wheaton kills things on our podcast.
Yes.
We're getting a message from him being like, will you stop telling people
cease and desist.
And then I'll be like, oh my god, Will Wheaton tweeted at us.
Yay! Let's double down on the Will Wheaton's a murderer theme.
He's not a murderer. Anyway.
Oh, you don't think killing babies is murder? Okay, Hope.
No, I didn't say wonderful, that. Hope. It doesn't count when they're fictional babies in a book.
Newsflash, everybody. Killing babies isn't murder, says Hope Mullinex.
We're doing this again, just like last
co-host
week.
Co-host of Jay Guys and Jedi.
I'm going to just go into Act 3 and leave you behind.
Wow, Hope. I thought I knew you.
You're such a jerk.
I thought you were cool,
I'm like,
man.
I'm on the borderline of, like, this is funny and this is making me uncomfortable. I'm on that borderline right now, Chris.
So basically you're on the edge of shut the fuck up, Chris?
Very close to it. Very close. Act three.
Act three.
I don't want people to think that I'm a racist, non-baby murderer person.
You said it. You just said it, not me. You just said it, not me. You guys heard her, right? 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 All you guys heard her? Yeah, they heard you.
Act three. It's a beautiful... It's a beautiful day for a torture scene.
You wrote that. You wrote that, Hope.
I don't have any defenses on that one.
Keep
I did
digging
write.
There, Mullinax.
It was so pretty. It was a beautiful scene. And then we go to saw Greta getting tortured. And I was just like, ugh. It was all sunny outside of the City of Isis. Anyway. Kalani and Tandon torture Saw to find out where the other rebels are hiding. In my defense, Dave Filoni wrote it first.
Oh yeah, Dave Filoni. Yeah, let's blame it on nice old Dave Filoni.
Wait. Who's the writer of this episode? I gotta go back up. The writer, it's Chris Collins' fault.
He's obviously a sicko. Baby killing sicko.
We're gonna get a cease and desist now from Chris Collins. Stop telling people that I kill people. Kalani and Tandon are torturing Saw. Saw refuses to tell them where the rebels are, and Kalani shocks them again. Tandon demands them to stop, pointing out that Saw is a direct link to the rebels. And Kalani is like, "You meatbag, your feelings are dumb." And Tandon knows Saw is more useful alive. If they kill Saw, then more people will rally to the rebel cause. Tandon takes a different approach of good cop, giving Saw food and water. They get into a debate about what's the right path for Onderon. Saw points out that they're not free under the Separatists. Tandon tosses back that living in the past doesn't always work for the future of the people. Saw throws out the point that he's a patriot, not a terrorist, and he explains that King Denim chose the people's well-being over fighting in an intergalactic war. The Separatists invaded, plain and simple. Tandon looks a bit shook at that. Meanwhile, outside, people are gathering for the execution. King Rash brings out Denim and Saw before the people. In the crowd, Steela, Lux, and their team move into position. Tandon looks on from above. King Rash gives this whole speech about how Denim is a traitor who needs to pay with his life. And as they put Denim's head in the execution block, about to chop it off, Steela gives the signal and shoots down the droids. The rebels move in, filling the area with smoke. They get the king and take out the droids on the platform. But as they run into the crowd, Dono is shot down, and the rebels and Denim are surrounded. Denim gives Steela the order to stand down, and the rebels lower their weapons. And the crowd is pissed off! Rash doesn't seem to care that the people are mad and puts Denim back into position to execute him. Just as Ahsoka moves into position to intervene, Tandon comes to the rescue! He runs out there with the royal militia to halt the execution. Tandon takes Rash into custody, and the crowd goes wild! And the rebels grab the king and flee into the crowd. Tandon sends his men with Steela's rebels to leave him behind and buy them more time. Kalani has his droids focus on Tandon. As soon as Tandon releases the king, he will die. And then Ahsoka literally flips onto the scene with her lightsaber blazing, ready to get shit done. And people cheer seeing a Jedi. Ahsoka force pushes back the droids, grabs Tandon, and flees into the crowd. The people block the droids' path so they can get away and scream that Denim is the true king. And Rash is scared. Back at the rebel hideout, everyone's on good terms again. Denim makes sure that Tandon and the army is on his side. He thanks Steela for her leadership. He tells Lux his mommy would be proud. Time to win back the will of the people. So then Ahsoka Skypes her dads going, "So, hi dads. I fucked up. The Separatists definitely know that we backed the rebels. I'm gonna need some big help about right now." And Anakin says they have to make sure it's okay with the Jedi Council first. So I guess we'll see what happens next week.
Yeah, let's run that past Wet Blanket Windu and see what he says.
our daughter fucked up. Can we go help her?
Here's the thing. Did you get the impression that they didn't that they weren't surprised? I don't think they thought she fucked up. I think they weren't surprised that she had to do that. I'll bet you if they were surprised about anything, is that she had to wait so long to do it.
I mean, Obi-Wan was the one that told her, I think in Act 1, like, hey, if you need to intervene,
sometime, intervene. Sometime you might have to do it, but you're going to just have to be smart about it. So yeah. I think she felt like she was calling, like, oh, I got to, and they were probably
kind
just
of like,
they were probably like, holy shit, I expected this about 12 hours ago, you know?
It was kind of like a conversation you call your parents, like when you crashed your car, their car.
Yeah, sort of, except your parents don't really like, well, I guess they do. I guess you would have to expect your kids are going to crash their car at some point. But I think when she called up, they were just sort of like, okay, this is going as planned, you know?
Yeah.
They were like, ah, we sort of knew this was going to turn out like this, you know? And, you know, don't sweat it that, you know? And but they also knew that they were going to have to deal with now the Separatists knowing the Jedi were there and that they don't have complete confidence that the Jedi Council is going to be, like, right on top of that. But, yeah, they did not seem too upset by me. They were just sort of like, okay, well, this is how we're going to, you know, this is how we go forward.
Yeah, it's actually, that's a really good point because, like, the whole point that Obi-Wan kept trying to make was they have to fight their own war. They have to find their own war. And the council might not be able to get to them fast enough, so at least he knows now that the people of Alderaan can hold their own until they can get there.
Yeah. I have another note that's just what I've been saying over and over again. Saw is still a bit more subtle than I would have expected. I like the interaction. I think the most important, well, my favorite part of the character interaction with this was with Saw and Tandon. And I like Tandon's character as someone who's stuck in a hard place. He's still he's for his people and not sold out like the Puppet King. But he's also super practical and understands fully what Saul's about. You know what I mean? He's not just like, I mean, really, for in his position in the context of what they're doing, he should be like, yeah, let's go cut Saw's head off, you know, with glee. So I like that they're sort of, that it's a subtlety. It happens kind of quickly, Tandon's redemption, but it's not even really a redemption because I don't think he was really had his mind changed. He was
It's like if you're in the army and there's, like, a leader change, you're still in the army and you're still expected to follow orders even if you don't get along with the leader, you know?
That's true, but in the army you're also under, and this is where things get sticky and back to Umbara, where you're at the, you're also bound by, like, I don't know what Onderon's army's ethics are, but usually in the military it's like, you have a code of ethics, and if you end up with a leader that's going to make you go against their code of ethics, then your code of ethics demands that you go against that leader, you know?
Yeah.
So I think he was totally for the rebels the whole time, but he also knew that he could do no good until there were certain circumstances or it had gotten to advance to a certain point and maybe a combination of both in the way it worked out. And then he could do something, you know, then he could and would do something because at that point it was practical.
It kind of actually goes back to that Act 1 scene where they bring in King Denim and then we get that flash of Tandon's face.
Yeah.
And I said, like, you know, there's some kind of emotion there. I couldn't quite read the emotion, but there is an emotion there that he has. Actually, I actually have a note about that scene too, so I'm going to go ahead and say it now. I really do like that scene mostly because, you know, in the future when we see Saw Gerrera, we see him in Rogue One, he's a crazy person, and then he's not quite as crazy in Rebels, but he's definitely brash, and he has no problem, like, stunning Sabine and leaving her behind and stuff. But what I like about that conversation is we get to see another side of Saul, that he can be thought out, and he can be calm.
and he is able to have a thoughtful debate and hold a conversation about his own ideas and ideals and how he sees things.
Yeah, it's, so it's nice. It's even one that it's even a kind of persuasive argument too. He's
yeah. So I'm glad that they gave us that other side of Saul, because somebody who might have just, like, for example, like Saul Rebel or Saul Rogue One, and now they're watching Clone Wars for the first time, that's a completely, like, different side of Saul that you don't see in Rogue One.
Yeah.
So because in Rogue One, like, you know, Saul won't even talk to Bodhi. Bodhi is like, I defected. I did this. I brought this to you. I'm not bad. And Saul's just like,
I don't
lies!
Care.
Everyone's lying to me.
Yeah,
lies!
I don't care.
I won't listen to you. You're the tentacle monster. Pull the tentacle monster in here.
You're not in the circle of trust, no matter what. Yep.
But at least here, like, we see the side of Saul that at one point in his life, he could have a thoughtful debate and actually talk his ideals with another person. It makes me actually really want to see some, like, earlier scenes of, like, him and Mon Mothma, like, in the much early, like,
yeah.
pre-rules, like, with them debating ideals. I would have really
You never know. We might. We still might.
Because I think it would kind of be a lot like this, only Mon Mothma would be way more on the diplomatic side. It'd be like Saul debating with Lux, I feel.
Yeah. Well, the only other things I had is, did you notice that I don't know if how big a John Lennon fan you are, but towards the end, there's a rebel. One of the rebels in the background looks like John Lennon from How I Won the War, and I wonder if they modeled him after that.
I missed that.
And basically, I think this episode is a nice mix, is the first, like, successful full synthesis of, like, the political episode and the action episode.
Yeah.
It's a perfect mix of those two things.
I could definitely agree with that. That's actually, and it has just that nice touch of romance too, with, like, Lux and Stilo.
Yeah, at least it's actual romance and not just like jealousy, weird high school stuff. So
yeah.
But that's all I got.
So my notes, going back to Saul. Again, they bring up that whole key point of how, like, resistance versus terrorism is all in point of view, because Tandon calls him a terrorist, and Saul's like, no, I'm a patriot.
Yep. Same thing as saying, you know, yeah.
Yeah. I wonder how many people... Without getting too into our real world, I wonder how many people who do stuff like that think that they're a patriot. Probably all of them.
All on any side of the debate of any kind of terrorists in any time period, in any time, yes, that has been always the debate of, like, you're a terrorist, no, I'm a freedom fighter, I'm actually 100% for my, you know. And in the Vietnam days, the kids that were protesting thought that they were, you know, standing up for their country, and the people that were against them thought that they were standing up for their country. So it's the age-old battle, Hope, the age-old question.
I'm laughing because you're bringing up this, like, really good point about Vietnam, and I'm thinking Sonic the Hedgehog with their freedom fighters.
Same with Sonic the Hedgehog, Hope. It's always been that way.
He was actually a terrorist the entire time against the humans.
We're going to go to the Video Game Veterans Administration and look up Sonic the Hedgehog and get some of his stories.
Yes. Meow. Come here. Come sit on me again. Maybe I can keep you. Anyway, my next note is I actually really like the design of the execution block. Like, that's no joke.
No, it's even that's savage. That's like, that was one of those things I was like, we're not going to see. I don't think the king's going to get decapitated, because I think it's almost to the line of intensity. Just having the idea of it, you know, sitting there, you know. I don't think I think it would actually be going too far if you saw it function on anything but a droid. You know what I mean?
I was actually expecting that, like, the shield part would come down and they would stick his head in it, and then it just clicks on dead.
You just put your head in it and until they hit the signal, and then it just, like, instantaneously is good. It's evil.
Rest in peace, fruit.
It's probably like a lightsaber where it cauterizes both sides, so it's probably, like, bloodless, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to talk about King Rash for a second, because I actually really do like King Rash. I think he's a really good design, and he's just different enough from our normal bad guys of the week. Because he's not brutal like Krell or Sharkin, and he's not cunning like Queen Mirage. He's definitely more of a Krennic Malfoy kind of character, where he has all this false power, and he was never really in power to begin with.
And he's dumber than them, too.
Yeah, and so I like that about him, because the bad guy of the week can get, like, really, really repetitive. So I kind of like in the last half of the season that they're kind of giving us these more three-dimensional bad guys. Because, like, in the first half of Clone Wars, it was just a lot of, like, fight the droids, win the battle, fight the droids, win the battle. It wasn't really until we started getting characters like Tarkin, and then we got Sharkin, who was a little bit more, like, brutal, and then we got Krell.
Yeah, no, this guy's more mundane. This guy's more of a bureaucrat who's just sort of gotten into this place because he's dumb and craven enough to be there and is just sort of like, yeah, I'm going to enjoy this. I got all the figs I can eat.
Yeah, and he's not even, like, really as good as, like, Queen Mirage or anything. And so, like, I guess it's just a testament to the second half of Clone Wars. Because the first half of Clone Wars, a lot of the bad guys were robots or Count Dooku. But now we're getting these, like, bad guys of the week. And
well,
I really
he's also not the real bad guy either. It's the Separatists are the real bad guys in it.
But, like, he's the figurehead for them. Right, but, like, right. I really like in the second half that we're getting so many different bad guys. And actually, a lot of them are people. Like, the first half, they were mostly, like, droids. But this second half, a lot of the bad guys are people. And they're all different. And I really like that about the second half of Clone Wars, is that we're getting so many different kinds of bad guys.
So many bad guys to choose from.
Yeah.
Such a rainbow of flavors.
And while it is really fast, I do like Tandon's change of heart because of the talk with Saul. It's actually quite believable how they present it in the episode. I mean, this is his first episode. And at the beginning, we get to see this very realistic general.
It reminded me of Game of Thrones in a little ways. It was a little more realistic in Game of Thrones, but still, it was very... It seemed like two real characters with sympathy for each other, you know?
Yeah, and like it's a fast change, but it's a believable change, because even in that very first scene in Act One, he doesn't seem like he's fully on board anyway.
No, I don't think. Yeah, I don't think there was much of a change to go to really be made, as much as Saw just had to convince him that, like, hey, if you work with me, we could feasibly get rid of the Separatists. So that's what the guy was more interested in. He's like, he doesn't want to get involved with Saw if Saw's just going to end up, like, pissing the people off and getting everybody killed, and then you just have the pissed off Separatists running the place. So he wanted to make sure that, like, probably this guy's got his head screwed on tight enough, and that the variables in place were there to where there was a chance that, because he has the army, that guy represents the army, so he's a game piece. You know, he's not just a tool; he is acting like a tool of the Separatists and the Plum King, but he's just the Fig King, but he's just the Plum Puppet, the Plumpet,
like
the Plumpet.
The Plumpet.
I amuse myself. But he's, you know, I mean, he's got the army. So if he decides, and that's what happens at the end, if he decides, the circumstances are right, then all of a sudden it's the Plumpet and the Separatists versus the army and some Jedi and the population. And things don't look so good for the Separatists. So I think that's what the calculation he made in his head, and said, okay, we could actually turn this tide, and that's what I'm interested in, is getting things back the way they were.
Yeah. I already mentioned this before, but I like how King Denim clearly has flaws, but he does what's right for his people.
Oh my god, I'm so happy we're done with the bullshit that Ahsoka's not allowed to do stuff.
This is like her jumping out to defend when we had the last one with what was it with Maul and Cad Bane. Remember when she just jumps out to like save Anakin from Cad Bane?
Oh, it was Obi-Wan undercover.
Obi-Wan. Yeah, that's right.
But it's because already that plot point wasn't working because she was clearly defending the rebels the last two episodes. So again, the droids would see that, report back to the command, so they should have known the entire time a Jedi was there.
Yep.
So it's just, I mean, it's just a plot point that hasn't worked out for the last, it just doesn't make sense because the droids should already know that a Jedi is there. Like, how do they not know that that's a Jedi with, like, flashing lightsabers, even in the first episode, because Obi-Wan and Anakin were there. So you had three Jedi with lightsabers. So it's just, like, a bullshit plot point. So I'm so happy she can actually act now because I'm ready for it. Though I just have to say, Ahsoka was saying the night before that she couldn't believe that the rebels were putting their lives on the line for one person. She totally did that for Tandon.
She does it all the time. And Anakin does it, and the people around her do it all the time. So she shouldn't be too surprised.
I know. I was just like, why are you saying that, Ahsoka? You do it all the time, and you just did it at the end of the episode.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's really all I have. Did you have anything else for the episode?
No. I'm ready to lift up my scorecards like a diving
competition. I thought you were about to say lift up your skirt.
Lift up my skirt and go to town.
You have your score on your little...
No, it's like a diving competition. I'm ready to like hold up my two little number cards.
No, you have your score written on your garter belt, which is why you have to lift up your skirt.
Yeah, that's right. It's like the Oscars. I lift up my skirt, pull the envelope out of my garter belt, and I give it an 8 out of 10. This story is progressing. It reminds me of I'm trying to think. It might have been your favorite story arc.
Umbara?
Yes. It reminds me of Umbara, where we're almost getting the same story. This is a in a row. But it's progressing slowly, you know? It's sort of going in depth in the story. So this episode and the last episode are very similar in their mix of like good and bad and what I liked and stuff. So I'm giving it the same score. It's this nice, steady, subtle progression from episode to episode. I sort of can't wait to see where it's going. Because how long is this arc? Is this 3 or 4 episodes?
4 episodes.
Four episodes. So we got 2 more episodes.
No. This is the third episode.
This is the third episode. So okay. So
it wraps up next week.
Okay. Well, we should see. Next week should get a higher score, if it's following its pattern.
We'll
see what I choose to do.
I actually like this episode a little bit better than last week's. I think there's some good things that are just like a touch better with it.
Like less jealous eye contact, eye rolly stuff.
Yeah, that's actually my very first note. There was very little team drama, and we get to see some dissent among the rebels with Saw and Steela, which is nice to show that they're not all on board. And I just really enjoy Saw proving that he's actually a diplomat and he can have a conversation. He's not the crazy person in Rogue One. That I like seeing that
he
other
has
side
ideas
of him.
and a real philosophy and plan,
and it makes him so much more believable.
Yes,
of like how he could become a rebel leader. Like that makes him so believable. And I like Tandon. I think he's a great character. His turn is very believable and very human. I think Denim is a great character too because he's very flawed. Like everybody's just so realistic. I think this is one of the most realistic episodes of Clone Wars we have because all the characters are very 3D. They all have the real wants and goals and needs and flaws, and that's the important thing. You can have a good character, but they better have flaws because that's what actually makes them the most human. And Ahsoka finally gets to fight, and I'm really excited about that. And so this is just a really good, solid episode of Clone Wars with action and politics and political moments and just and character moments. So I actually gave it an 8.5 out of 10. I think it's better than last week's episode.
I could totally see that.
If I had to sit down and watch either last week or this week, I would definitely watch this week. I think it's a much better episode. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page, especially on iTunes, because when you rate and review the show, it helps people find the show. And we're not just saying that. It helps people find the show. We actually, like, move up in the iTunes charts when we get more rates and ratings and reviews and stuff. So if you like us and you want other people to find us, make sure you rate and review our show. This week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for our Season 4 wrap-up episode. Take it away, Chris.
All right. Our first one comes from... Oh, yeah. Our Twitter keeper, Gene Jean, the podcasting machine.
Do we do the doo-doo-doots now?
We might as well.
Gene. Gene. You caught me off guard. I was like, you set it up like the doo-doo-doots.
It's okay. We'll get another chance coming up. And okay. And Mr. Gene Hendricks says, what was the point of no return for the Jedi when they started taking babies away from their families just to keep the order going and giving them to Will Wheaton, who would take them and throw them into the sun? Oh, wait, I added that part. Sorry.
I wish I never told you that Will Wheaton thing.
They became a cult at that point, and that was their downfall, in my humble opinion.
Oh, that's what IMHO means.
Yes.
How do you know that? I'm the young guy.
I know.
You kids these days, get off my lawn.
I know that because I probably asked somebody younger than me what I am. I remember the day years and years and years ago before the podcast when I played my first online game with Scott Gardner out of nowhere. We hadn't talked in like 5 years, and he popped up and he's like, you should install this game and we should play it online. And at one point I had to ask him, what does LOL mean? And then he's like, that means laugh out loud. And I'm like, oh, that explains a lot.
It took me forever to figure out what OTL meant. And it's just the, like, shape of a person on all fours with their head down.
Oh, okay. So it's a picture rather than...
Yeah. I'm going to type it right now. See?
Oh,
OTL. Looks like a person on all fours.
Yeah.
It took me forever to figure that one out.
All right. So the next letter... We'll see what kind of lingo we got in this one. Paul C. Kelly says, Rexvolution! Oh, yeah, it was the most epic Rexvolution of all. I folded all my laundry during that Rexvolution.
Wasn't it like 30 minutes long?
It was over 30 minutes long, yes. It was amazing. Oh, my God. Great job, Hopi says. Yes, very entertaining. Yes, it was.
Thank you. This was also the episode that you opened your Christmas present.
Oh, right. I listened to the first part of this in the morning ride to work, and after hearing Chris's excitement about the Green Series C-3PO, oh yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I Googled this at work to see what the excitement was about. Whoa, good thing my computer did not freeze and anyone was walking by. Yeah, I don't know, you might have gotten a pass, but then again, you know, yeah. Well, C-3PO was of age by that time. He was 20-some years old by that time, so you didn't at least have kitty robot porn on your computer desk.
I have a kitty in my lap. Does that count?
Moving on! Han Solo's line in Empire, hurry up, Goldenrod, or you're going to be a permanent resident, had a whole new meaning. Oh, yeah. great season. I could easily take second viewings of all of these and have comments to write. You get on that. Season 3 was a little more tough. On to season 5. Look forward to the movie commentaries. And by now you've already heard them and our 3 hours of Last Jedi review.
I'm just now about to finish up our Rogue One commentary. And then that's next is the Last Jedi episode. Because honestly, I don't remember. I listen to our podcast because I don't remember what I say.
Yeah, well, you see, that's what I get during editing. I go, oh, all right. Sometimes during editing, I'll be listening to stuff, and I'll be like, shit, I should have said this. And then I say it, and I'm like, oh, good. All right, we did not decide on a,
that's a wrist. Oh, it feels hard. I don't know if my teeth would like that one.
On a candy bar.
Maybe we should finally knock out the Mr. Big, because it's been in our box for a while.
Yeah, that's true. We don't want Mr. Big to get stale. Nobody wants to eat an expired Mr. Big.
Oh, and it's from Canada, so that makes sense, because they're the second biggest country in the world, followed by... It better have maple in it. Okay, well, if you don't know why we're eating candy, Chris hates American Kit Kats like a jerk, and he hates also...
like a person with taste?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so...
if I didn't hate Kit Kats, would we be eating candy right now? No hope, we wouldn't.
But our friend Dario Gonzalez is a flight attendant and sends us... I'm sorry, this kind of looks like a penis.
I was just going to say it kind of looks like poop. It reminds me of Caddyshack. It reminds me of the Snickers bar that ended up... Because it has actual lumps on it, like poop peanuts.
I've definitely seen dildos like this. Anyway, Dario sends us candy from all over the world review. This is the Mr. Big from Canada.
If this is based on a real penis, this person needs to go to the doctor and be checked out soon.
Oh my gosh, really good.
Mine was broken, so I have a piece of it in my hand. So it looks like a poop, but then when you look at the cross section of it, it's like a poop shape made out of chocolate and Rice Krispies with like a Kit Kat just sort of shoved through the middle of it. It's not even straight. It's just sort of like, oh, this is good.
Rice Krispies are like one of my favorite things in candy.
Yeah, it's got Rice Krispies on the outside and basically
there's like
a sort of vanilla Kit Kat on the inside.
Yeah, there's like a cream thing in the Kit Kat part.
Yeah, it's more like Oreo filling almost.
Oh my gosh, good job,
and then
Canada.
just like the drizzliest drizzle of caramel, just like. Not enough so it actually stretches out of there, but there's a little bit of caramel in there.
Oh man, Canada, this is amazing. No kitty, you can't have chocolate. That's bad for you. Yeah, good job, Canada. This is really good. No kitty.
No.
You're not allowed to have chocolate. No.
No kitty, that's my Hot Pocket.
She doesn't like to be kissed on the head. Like, her sister I can just, like, kiss all the time on the head, but she does not like anything near her face. So whenever she, like, leans in, I try to kiss her, and she just pulls away, like, no!
Is she the one that got her head injured at some point when she was outside?
No, that's her sister. Her sister's the ruffian. Her sister has got her ear torn, got her nose torn. She's the one that tore her knee muscle that she had to be in a room for, like, 2 weeks.
She's a barbarian.
She's a tiny little thing too. She's very long.
She's got Napoleon complex.
No, I call Spokes Princess Pushover because she's such a chill cat. She's just really chill, and her sister bullies her. Like she does not fight back.
Targaryen
against her sister.
Is a tiny little lady.
Are you the Khaleesi? She's gonna show up with like a lizard one day, and I'm just gonna be like, no.
She's gonna show up with some eggs. She's going to show up for some eggs, and one day you guys are going to be barbecuing outside. She's going to leap into the barbecue with the eggs in her mouth, and you're going to go, no! And then the next day you're going to be like, well, I guess I better clean out the barbecue. And she'll be in there, like, licking her leg with, like, four little baby dragons.
Are you the Khaleesi? You still can't have my chocolate. Ow!
No chocolate for the Khaleesi.
She just, like, reached up and grabbed my, like, bare wrist with her claw. Like, give me that. Well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That is a website for you morons, I guess I would call you, that don't, or
Our listeners are not morons.
Well, they are. Just if they don't know what a website, if they don't know what something that ends in .com is, I don't know what to do for them. I don't want them to be our listeners. If they're
just so you know, Chris was the one that called you a moron. He's a terrible person. You should go hate on him.
Good luck. Good luck with
that's
that.
That's very true. Chris
good,
is
good
not.
Good luck with that. You gotta get me on. You gotta get me on something worse than I got you on. Hope if you want to really smear me, good.
Yes, but I do appreciate you sometimes, like when you were on my Facebook defending me. So thank you.
Oh yeah, well when it comes right down to it, yeah.
Chris is a good friend to have in your court.
Yes, I'm just saying this to anybody out there. If you're one of those people. And honestly, honest to God, I don't care what their politics are. If you have one of those people that are usually like a coworker or a relative, and for political reasons, you can't tell them to, how shall I put this?
Go
forth and mount up upon themselves. You can't really say that for political reasons. But you would like somebody to do that, come get me. If we're Facebook friends, come get me. I'll do it. And I won't go there and like just like start yelling at them. I'll just try to like humiliate them Hannibal Lecter style. I like it. It's fun. It's fun for me. It's fun for you. It's not fun for them. And you get to go like, I don't know. That's just, when they go, what's the deal with this guy on your Facebook? You can go, I don't know. He's just somebody on my friends list. I knew him in college. He's off his meds. I don't know what it is. You started it.
That sounds like your new brand new business model, Chris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if only people would pay me to do it, that would be. I think I could be rich if people paid me to do that. I could quickly rise to the top of that field. I'd be competing, I guess, with Russian bots. But anyway, there's also a Two True Freaks Facebook page where we announce all the shows from all the vast spectrum of podcasters that we have in this vast spectrum of topics. We also have the Two True Freaks Cantina, which is sort of like a forum for discussion. We have a Twitter page, a Two True Freaks Twitter page run by Gene, the podcasting machine. Here's attempt number two.
Gene.
That was like the CD skip version.
Gene. Well, you said we need to change it up. So.
I know.
Oh, didn't I say last week we were gonna do a country twang?
Jane.
Yeah, put y'all Janes on. I'm from the South, and that was a terrible Southern accent I just did.
Excellent.
I can't, like, force Southern. I just have to be naturally Southern, and sometimes I'm just really Southern.
Does it happen when, like, you're really angry or something like that, you know?
It's just gotta come right out. I can't, like, force being Southern. Well, like, if I get, like, really, like, sometimes it just comes right out. I'm
angry
just, like,
or excited?
That's real nice.
Like the Incredible Hulk, sorta.
Rex has real party lips.
Rex.
Would
Rex get you excited enough to be like, oh, Rex?
Oh, Rex? You look damn pretty today. Look
Rex. Oh, my God. We should do Gone with the Wind with Hope and Rex. Rex Butler.
I ain't no lady.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a carabas.
Pew, 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 pew.
Pew, pew. She's like helping to sew up bodies from the Clone Wars. Yeah, I could see it. Where can people find you, Hope?
Corazon's burning in the background, and I'm just like, Rex,
yeah.
Don't go.
He's basically in a clown outfit, but he's got like a little he's got the little greasy Southern mustache.
It looks so much different in, like, a clown outfit. Like, he rides up on his,
he doesn't have J-Guys. He just has, like, a little mustache, like, painted onto the front of his mask.
I'm sorry. Like, I'm on the clown outfit now, where he rides up on his balloon animal, and he's just like, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. Squeaky, 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 squeaky. You're right off in the sunset. Oh, so, Two True Freaks, check us out.
Those balloon animals are great to have, though, because when you ride them, they get all static electricity, and you don't even, you can just stick all your stuff to the sides of them, carry it along.
Yeah, so twotruefreaks.com, check us out, you get more of this.
Yes. What about you, Hope? Let's talk about you for a minute, Hope. Where can they find you?
Oh, Lord, you can find me at JGuysAndJedi. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Molinex. Have we talked about the Rebels trailer? Yeah, we did. We did. Okay, never mind. Sorry. I was thinking about that because Rebels is back in 3 weeks, and I'm not prepared. I'm not prepared.
Rebels will be back by the time you hear this.
Oh, God. I'm not ready.
The end run.
I'm not ready. You can also find me at Hope Monex, and I'm also the news writer for WhatTheFangirl.com, where I give opinions and news stuff. And I haven't written anything since last week, because we recorded 2 episodes tonight, and I did not write anything in the 5 minutes I was peeing. Between episodes.
Yeah, you gotta have that notepad, right? But just have a whiteboard right by the toilet.
You know, I really wish I could have a whiteboard in the shower to write down ideas, but the water would not be a good thing. I think I talked about that.
No,
on
the I think if you had permanent markers, I don't think water will affect it at all. I think.
But the thing is, then you can only write so much because it's permanent marker.
Well, no, I mean even just the whiteboard markers. I think they're waterproof. I think you still need special like alcohol-based stuff to take them off or whatever.
No, you just need to wipe them. Wipe.
What about this? What if you use something that you could write crayon on and wipe off, like one of those like crayon sheets?
You know, they have those brand new, like, kind of, like, kid water things where you, like, color with the water, but that would still defeat the purpose. But I'm sure I could get creative if I really needed to. Usually I just, like, repeat it over and over and over again in the shower until I get out and then I write it
just
down.
Just spray paint it right on the tile.
Oh, yeah, that would go over swimmingly.
Swimmingly? I think that's the first time that that word's turned up in JGuysAndJedi.
Was it last year that I said that, or last week that I said that someone snooted at somebody? They snooted.
Yes, I like that. I need to put that, work that into my vocabulary.
I'm going to snoot at you. Snoot. Chris spent the entire episode meanly snooting at me. Meanly, you're a mean snoot.
Well, if you'd stop talking about baby killing, maybe I'd
snoot a little left. You're the one that keeps bringing up Will Wheaton.
Yeah, the baby killer.
God. I believe it. Bye, guys.
Will Wheaton kills babies.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at twotruefreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. T-R-U-E-F-R-E-A-K-S.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
We were finally invited aboard one of these spacecraft, which landed near Ann Arbor, Michigan on October the 24th of 1954. This is a drawing of the craft. As I was leaving the craft, the commander, Soltek, said, "Soon others of your people will be able to have an experience similar to this."